As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Ausperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., wealth management specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
We'll find out what happens. He's in court today, or I should say the case is in court. He's in a prison in El Salvador. The case is before a judge. The judge is probably going to rule that he has to be returned, and then in which case then it's going to go back to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court had done a very strange ruling and remanded it back to the lower court, but also said something to the effect that the United States would have to help facilitate his return. It was confusing, and that's why it's back to the lower court now. I imagine this judge is going to turn around and say that he's got to be brought back to the U.S. So that's going to go to the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court's in a bit of a pickle here because it can't compel a foreign country to return an American citizen. I don't know how it compels the administration to go get him. I don't know how you can compel an administration to take an American out of a country. I don't know how you, let's say in the case of like Brittany Griner, let's say the Supreme Court ruled the United States had to get Brittany Griner out of Russia, right? So, oh, we have our guest. Okay, let's go to our guest, Tony. I'm very happy. Thank you for the reminder. Good. I'm glad our guest is ready. And let's go to him right now. We'll come back to this conversation in just a moment because we got a lot to talk about with Crossfire Hurricane. And I want to welcome to the show, Tony Schaffer is a New York Times bestselling author, former U.S. Army Reserve Lieutenant Colonel, and president of the London Center for Policy Research. Newly declassified Crossfire Hurricane documents shine light on Christopher Steele, Hillary Clinton, and so more. Tony, I'm so glad you joined us in Philadelphia. You know, our mutual friend Michael Pelka was raving about you. Thanks for making the time today.
Sure. Great to join you, Rich. Thanks for having me. Good to be on.
Absolutely. So you're an expert in this stuff, and we've actually been following each other on X for years, and I've read a lot of your work. And you've been talking about this, the Crossfire Hurricane.
Right.
But there's so much that you did not have access to until Kash Patel released all these documents and files. So prior to that, how were you able to gain access to a lot of the information to develop all of the knowledge that you've had on this?
Well, two ways. First, I used to be a counterintelligence special agent, so I understand how the system works. So within the context of predicates, of actually having investigative justification, it's a very black and white world, Rich. You can't freelance. So when you start seeing the pattern of freelancing, of people moving forward without clear and legal predicates, then you start taking notice. Secondly, I've worked at the level we're talking about with regarding, you know, having White House approvals. I've had to go to the White House several times to get approvals, waivers for operations. So one of the first things I recognized within the pattern is these people weren't operating as free as they were, free and loosey-goosey as they were without full top cover. Rich, I know I don't know these people, but I know this type of people. They are not courageous. They don't do this stuff unless they know someone above them. And that was basically confirmed by Peter Strzok when he testified in Congress saying, oh, yeah, the seventh floor knew everything. So that, you know, before that, though, just knowing the patterns, knowing essentially what was going on, having some level of access. I'm still a member of Law Enforcement Virginia. I still work extensively with a number of both intelligence agencies as well as law enforcement agencies. And the people I was talking to flat out said there's no there. There's no Russia collusion. And beyond that, look, I was in the Trump camp. I was actually on the transition team. I during late 2016, I was the liaison between Mike Flynn and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Joe Dunford, as well as Mark Milley. And Mark was chief of staff of the Army at the time. So just being there, and I was in Trump Tower during the time that Mike Flynn was calling foreign ambassadors, basically talking about the transition from Obama to Trump. There was nothing indicating to me that anything except normal, best accepted practices were ongoing. So those things all together resulted in me concluding without a doubt that the whole thing was, as I said, on the 4th of March, on Saturday, the 4th of March of 2017, that it was Soviet level wrongdoing. I have never changed my assessment from that date, and it turned out my assessment was correct.
Now that Kash Patel, the FBI director, has released, what is it, Tony? Is it 700 classified documents the Biden administration was hiding? What have you learned since then?
Just the process was flawed because it was meant to be flawed. Everything that I initially assessed was correct. They were taking information out of context. They were using people like Stephen Halper, someone who belonged to the Office of Net Assessment, as an agent provocateur to try to go into meetings, to try to get people to say things which were fundamentally not true. These things have all been confirmed to the level of where I believe there's a criminal predicate going the other way. That is to say that this wasn't simple. We got it wrong, but we were doing our best. They got it wrong because they designed it to be incorrect for purposes of creating a foundation to justify a coup d'etat against a duly elected president, that being Donald Trump, during his first term.
There's no doubt, Tony, that they wanted to stop him from becoming president. They wanted to undermine his presidency while he was president, and then they ultimately wanted to stop him from getting reelected. And this Russia collusion hoax was the way to do it. They trampled on civil liberties. They trampled on American civil liberties. This is really the weaponization of our government using a lot of tools we gave them post 9/11 and pre 9/11, right? To go after Carter Page, George Papadopoulos, but ultimately the goal was to infiltrate and spy on a presidential campaign. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. And plus, they had people in there even after the campaign who were essentially spies or what I would call embeds. One of the issues with the first term, I kind of suspected it, but later it was confirmed, you had people working for the other side who were there to be essentially tripwires or people who were preparing for negative activity. The Vindmans were an example of that. They were there for purposes of not advising the president through the National Security Council. Their job was to find a way to get dirt or create dirt on the president. That was happening all across the board. So and by the way, I don't think it's over. I'll be blunt here, Rich. I think that there are people even now in this current administration who were better hid. Pete Hegseth is just reported has just dismissed one of his deputies. Reuters picked up this news story saying that one of his deputies were leaking information. So I don't think it's over. I think the first go around 2016 into the going in 2017 on Jeff Sessions. I think Jeff Sessions was someone who was there to limit the ability. One of those safeguards or guardrails. Jim Mattis. I'm convinced Jim Mattis was playing for the other team at this point. That all happened because they were trying to make sure that he, President Trump, didn't do things beyond what the mono party, the left and right. This wasn't a Democrat Republican thing. This was people from both parties believing that they were smarter than the American people about what should be the policy direction of the United States. And by the way, they still exist. It's called the deep state. And I don't think we're done with them yet.
Tony Schaffer's with me, New York Times bestselling author, former U.S. Army Reserve Lieutenant Colonel. It's an honor to have him here. President of the London Center for Policy Research, an expert in all these things. He's on X. Great Twitter handle, by the way. Tony, I think it'd be better if you shared it than I shared it. What's your Twitter handle?
It's T Spooky with underscores between each letter. And it works pretty well. And yeah, by the way, Rich, just for the record, I'm a retired lieutenant colonel, and the whole lieutenant colonel thing was part of the fact that we use covers. It just so happened when I had to testify, I got stuck in my lieutenant colonel cover from Afghanistan. So I know that's a bit hard for people to understand, but and yes, I am actually a retired lieutenant colonel. We had to maintain all the qualifications that people do in the real world, but I'm basically a retired operative. And we have to go and be prepared. I've been undercover from everything from a stuntman to a gray arms dealer. I've had my own company. So we do a variety of things for the purposes of being, you know, spies for the United States.
That's fascinating. And if I could, I'd like to ask a little bit more about that, Tony, because I,
sure.
You know, in reading your bio, I mean, it's incredibly impressive. What's Spy's Eye? Chain of Command and Spy's Eye. What's that?
So Spy's Eye was a pilot we did for the Travel Channel. They actually paid for us to go to London and do a pilot. It's online. You can watch the pilot. And, of course, they had a change of leadership, so that went a different direction. And then Chain of Command. And, yeah, I'm actually, according to the IMDb, I'm an actor. And then Chain of Command, I was one of the creators and producers of a series called Chain of Command by National Geographic. And basically, when I was advising the chairman, Joe Dunford, he said, I can't get credit for everything the Pentagon's doing. I said, well, let's bring in National Geographic and see if we can do something to document what you're all doing. So Chain of Command is a series, 8-part series, which documents Joe Dunford, putting together the buy with and through strategy, which was used to defeat ISIS in 2018 and 2019. So I became a TV producer. So it's something that I still work for that team. As a matter of fact, I had a call today with a leadership team who was looking at doing a season 2 of that too. So that's why that all happened. And by the way, it's a great series, even though Nat Geo's kind of disowned it because Disney bought them and they became woke. So it's still out there though. So that's how that all happened.
When Tony, when you think back to Crossfire Hurricane and Lisa Page,
yeah,
and Peter Strzok, Bonnie Watson Coleman, the congresswoman, kept calling him Peter Strzok during the hearing, and it stuck in my head. But Peter Strzok and Lisa Page are having an affair. They're lovers. They're texting. They're saying he can't become president. We won't let him. We'll stop him. It comes out in these new documents. She said, "My God, if anybody ever finds this out, you know, we're cooked. We're done." The brazenness of these people to spy on American citizens, to infiltrate a presidential campaign. Did they all just assume he was going to lose and then they would just get away with it? Was that the whole plan? Because it doesn't seem like they really had a good getaway. And if you're going to rob a bank, you got to have a getaway car. What was their getaway plan here?
Barack Obama. That's all it was. So this the folks we're talking about here are part of this permanent state, the deep state, that they believe that they can essentially work with impunity to do things which normal Americans would be prosecuted for. And she was right. Essentially, it's like, yeah, people find out, but they try to take care of them. DOJ gave them a settlement of some sort during the Obama years. During the Biden years, of something like $3 million. So they try to pay them off still, even with that. So the idea here is that, yeah, there's people like that who believe that they are working for, quote unquote, causes more important than the political process of our nation. That's why it's what makes them so dangerous, is they have this attitude. And that attitude is underwritten by people like Barack Obama. There's been a very clear fusion of the deep state to the Democrat Party. And the reason that you see this fusion is because the Democrats don't care. They will do anything for power. Some Republicans do. I throw in Lindsey Graham and John McCain in that group. Mm-hmm. And they were more than willing to do and say things that would be essentially sedition at best, treason at worst, because they thought they were going to be covered. And that's why they were so afraid and worked so hard to stop from Donald Trump coming in, because Trump, frankly, doesn't care. He's not part of that club. George Carlin always talks about, you know, the club. Yeah. You know, we're not in it. Well, Trump's not in it either. They're in it. And that's what they were trying to do, essentially, is preserve that. And let me say something. It may be a little bit radical. I don't know. But people like Bill Barr are part of that club. Bill Barr, when he got in there, while he was able to kill the Russia collusion narrative, he killed it, Rich, not because it was the right thing to do. He killed it because he saw it was damaging the institutions he had invested in. He saw the damage it was being done to the FBI and to DOJ. So his job was to save the institution. He could care less about Trump. And that was very clear in the results of the 2020 election. Barr did nothing. As a matter of fact, I would argue, based on my own experience, him yelling at me on the phone was trying to obfuscate and stop legitimate investigations into massive ballot fraud. And again, people like Barr, being a Republican, theoretically, were there to preserve the institution. So these loyalties run deep. And Strzok, Page, and I put in there Barr in that category. They all believe somehow that this government Leviathan and what it does is more important than preserving the Constitution and the right of the people to choose the political leaders they want to lead the country.
Tony, was there this thinking after he won the election? I mean, they did the dossier. They had this law firm involved in this. They thought maybe this dossier would stop him. Was there this thinking that if they could show everybody that he was a plant from Russia, it would kind of reignite the feelings of the Republican Party of the Cold War, and they would turn on him? Was that the thinking and the goal? And then they would essentially now either remove him from office or just make his presidency completely irrelevant?
Well, yes and no. This is one of the documents that James Baker signed. This is available out there. This is the Federal Bureau of Investigation Electronic Communications. I think it's dated 05-16-2017. And it's basically the document that was used to launch the investigation, the criminal counterintelligence investigation against a sitting president, Donald Trump. The belief was, if they could make this look real enough, that is to say, they were going to use all of these weaponized mechanisms. You mentioned that, Rich. If it looked legitimate enough, they could put enough pressure on Trump to make him resign. And who would have benefited from that, Rich? Mike Pence. Mike Pence, I would argue, was fully in on all of this, because like LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson and Kennedy and JFK, Pence, I think, was fully in on this. Remember, Pence was the guy that got rid of Mike Flynn, or he's part of the getting rid of Mike Flynn. They had to get Mike out of there because Mike, I think, saw this was coming. They couldn't have done this with Mike Flynn being in place. And I would argue the more legitimate they could make this investigation look, people like Jim Mattis, John Kelly, they were all going to be there to allow kind of a soft landing of the government into the arms of Pence and get things back on track in their view. So that's I think, what they were doing. They wanted to make it look real. And to make it look real, you had to have all the mechanisms, to include the media, all saying the same thing, doing the same thing, no matter how fictitious it was. And that's how dangerous this was, because this was a legitimate, well, illegitimate, but clear and precise attempt at a coup by the deep state against President Trump in the first term.
That's fascinating stuff, Tony. I'm so grateful you made time for us today. You know, for the record, I just want to let you know, I was against Bill Barr getting the attorney general position, and I said so at the time. And people said, they yelled at me. They said, you got to trust Trump on this. I said, no, we got to tell him he's making a mistake. And it certainly was a huge mistake. Your expertise is second to none on this. I'm so grateful for your time. Would you come back and visit us again as you read through all this and give us some more details?
Absolutely.
We'd really appreciate it.
Sure. Look forward to talking to you again. Thanks, Rich.
Thank you, Tony.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, excellent stuff. And I got him out right on time, just like I said I would, Matt DeSantis. You see? Look at that. But, you know, just like with President Trump, he probably robbed me of another 30 seconds with Tony
Schaffer.
Excellent interview. Outstanding. He's great. Good work. You didn't get me a dwarf, but you got me Tony Schaffer. So, I mean, you still need to get me a dwarf, though. I need a dwarf.
I'll have to be honest. I got to be honest. I didn't really get you Tony either. That was more of a Mike Opelka setup.
I know. We all know that. Everybody knows that. So
I got you Trump on election night, though.
No, you didn't. You didn't get it.
Yes, I did.
Did not get me Trump on election night. You facilitated a phone call. That's what you did. Trump.
Yes, I did. I basically shot him a text message, and he said, anything for you, Matt, and bam, he was on air.
Oh, the disinformation is unbelievable. You're like trying to rewrite the record like Fauci at this point. All right, we got a lot more to get to besides this nonsense, so let's take a quick break. We come back. At some point, the president is going to be signing an executive order. They're hearing on the Maryland man right now. This man is not from Maryland. He's not an American citizen. He had a deportation order against him, but yet he's now known as the Maryland man. Just saying, I went to school in Maryland. I'm not the Maryland man either. This man, this guy who's been deported, this case is now in federal court. It's going to be kicked back up to the Supreme Court of the United States. This also comes as a federal judge has said that 500,000 illegal immigrants, each one of them has to get a hearing. That's insane, and that could never happen. And Biden gave them mass amnesty with this parole thing that he did to let them into the country. And if Biden had the executive authority to do that, Trump should have the executive authority to reverse it. We'll talk about that as well as the show continues. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. The Big Story of the Hour brought to you by our friend, Dr. Mike Veneria. Spring is here. Now is the time to get that beautiful smile that you deserve. So go see him today, VeneriaDental.com. Two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Coming right back.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Excellent stuff. So, lots to get to as we continue on along here on our Tuesday show. I want to play for you a clip here that I have in my formerly pangolin-stained fingers. This is about this Abrego Garcia guy. And this is the case that's in court right now, whether or not this quote-unquote Maryland man should be returned to the United States of America or not. All right, this is the case that's playing out in federal court and the case that the United States Supreme Court is ultimately going to decide on. This is what Caroline Leavitt said today. This is cut number six, describing this man and the due process that he has received. And the fact of the matter is that this individual now, even if the court orders him to be returned, how does that get facilitated exactly? This is the problem that the court now faces, which is that you cannot compel a foreign country to do something, and you can't compel the executive to take action against a foreign power. Like, in other words, back to the example I gave you before about Brittany Griner, right? So let's say that Brittany Griner gets arrested in Russia for having marijuana, and the Supreme Court were to order the president to facilitate her return. Well, what is he supposed to do? Is he supposed to send the Navy SEALs in? Is he supposed to invade Russia? Is he supposed to start a war? I mean, it's illogical and it's ridiculous. And it's the same thing in this instance. He's in an El Salvador prison. I mean, theoretically, the president, if the Supreme Court says you need to get this person back, the president could ask him, but he could say no, and the president can tell the Supreme Court that the guy said no. But how does the president get a guy back from another country? You see, this is the problem now that the court's going to have to face, because the court did not address that issue other than to say that the administration would have to. Basically, if he was to be sent back, would have to send him a flight, essentially, but then remanded it back down to the lower court. So it was not a definitive ruling by the high court, and it left a lot of people very confused. This is what the Supreme Court's been doing a lot of lately, which is kicking it back down to the lower courts when they need to be making definitive rulings on things to just clear up the process. But this is who this guy is, and this is about to become a legal nightmare, because I imagine this federal judge is about to rule this guy has to be returned to the United States. How you compel that, though? This is not even a situation of what Andrew Jackson faced with when the Supreme Court, that famous quote you've heard about, the Chief Justice has made his ruling, now let's see him enforce it. This is even beyond that. And his point at the time was, what's the enforcement mechanism to remove these Indians from Georgia? But people have taken that out of context. Andrew Jackson would later go on to say the Supreme Court should always be, you should always listen to the Supreme Court. It's the final decider in these matters. But in this case, it's not even a matter of physically dealing with moving people or dealing with a state and Indians and territorial. This is a foreign country that we're talking about. So I don't know how they resolve this. I really don't. But at the same time, this is a guy who's sounds like a pretty bad dude who had a lot of due process. And, you know, I mean, I'm sorry that his wife's pregnant and I'm sorry that he's a dad, but there's a lot of people in prison who have pregnant wives and children. And that's the reality in the United States. There's pregnant women in prison. There's moms in prison. Like, that's just a fact. And we've deported people with kids before in this country. Sometimes it's mean, but it doesn't make it unlawful. Even if it's mean, like sometimes it might be mean to say, well, you know, you can't have a mom in prison, like hug her husband because he might be, slipping her a shiv because she tried to kill somebody in the shower once. Like, it might be mean, but then again, maybe not. So, like, the law doesn't really look at these things and say, well, if you're a dad, no. There's lots of people who've been separated from their children and their spouses for the rest of their lives, depending on the crimes they've committed, and they're American citizens. So, but the media has found their thing with this, and the Democrats have too. I think politically, the Democrats are making a huge mistake on this. I really do. They're making a huge mistake. For this senator to double down and say he's going to go down there and like try to fly this guy back, this Maryland senator, Chris Van Hollen, I mean, I don't really think people want this guy back. I mean, if you were to do a poll of most Americans, they probably don't want him back in the country. It's no different than saying, would you want a gang member released from an American prison because his wife is pregnant, because he has kids? I'd be like, no, I don't. The fact that he's a dad or has children is a moot point to the fact that this guy is a bad hombre. He's a bad guy. I mean, believe it or not, killers can be dads. I'm watching this show right now on, was it Hulu? Happy Face? It's pretty good, actually. About Dennis Quaid plays a serial killer who's in prison, and his daughter she's been trying to hide the fact that she's his daughter her whole life, and now it's come out, and it's a whole thing. I don't want to give it away. No spoilers, but anyway. So it's not like they're going to, like, let him out because he's a dad. Like, well, you kill people, but now you're a dad, so go on your way now. Hate to separate you from your family. I mean, that's just ridiculous. So this is who Abrego Garcia is, according to the White House press secretary. And remember, this man had his due process. This man had been given a deportation order by a judge. This had dragged on for years. They didn't just pluck this guy out of working at a vineyard and decide to send him to a prison in El Salvador. It's the way the media is making it out to be, but that's not the case. Cut number six.
Yesterday in the Oval Office, administration officials made it very clear that El Salvador is responsible for Mr. Abrego Garcia, yet El Salvador's president said we're not going to do anything with him. So my question is, who is responsible for this man and where he's going to end up?
Well, no. First of all, President Bukele said that he is not going to smuggle a foreign terrorist back into the United States of America, as many in this room in the Democrat Party seemingly want him to do. Abrego Garcia was a foreign terrorist. He is an MS-13 gang member. He was engaged in human trafficking. He illegally came into our country. And so deporting him back to El Salvador was always going to be the end result. There is never going to be a world in which this is an individual who's going to live a peaceful life in Maryland because he is a foreign terrorist and an MS-13 gang member. Not only have we confirmed that, President Bukele yesterday in the Oval Office confirmed that as well. So he went back to his home country where he will face consequences for his gang affiliation and his engagement in human trafficking. I'm not sure what is so difficult about this for everyone in the media to understand. And it's appalling, truly appalling, that there has been so much time covering this alleged human trafficker and this gang member, MS-13 gang member. It's truly striking to me.
So the point about that is that there was a deportation order. The issue is that he wasn't supposed to go to El Salvador because he was afraid of this other gang, which the president of El Salvador has effectively eliminated. But let's assume for a second that El Salvador sent him back. Like, let's assume that El Salvador and the president said, okay, listen, the court has said he's got to get sent back to the United States. Then they fly him back and he lands, and then he immediately gets put back on a flight and is flown to another country and deported there. Her point about there's no scenario in which he lives in Maryland, that is correct, because there's a deportation order on him. The issue here is the logistics of where he was supposed to be sent. And the question of whether or not it was El Salvador or not. It was not a question of whether he should be deported. So let's say El Salvador, theoretically, then. Say this judge in Maryland rules today. He's got to be returned to the U.S. And let's say the president says, fine, you know what? I'm going to call the president of El Salvador and say, do me a solid, throw this guy on a plane and send him back here so that I can be in compliance with the court. The minute that that guy touches down on U.S. soil, then the deportation order that the other judge had on him is still in place. They just deport him again to a different place that's other than El Salvador. I mean, that's what we're discussing here. This isn't a matter, again, I know the media is making him out to be as this peaceful father in Maryland just minding his own business, and all of a sudden they come around, they deport this guy, but that's not the case of what we're saying here. They're framing it this way. And I think if the Democrats want to die on this hill, I mean, this is, in my opinion, a very bad hill to die on. You know, I'm as civil libertarian as you get. This man has had his due process. He's had more due process than many Americans get in this country. And the deportation order against him was there. The question of deporting him to El Salvador. The administration made a mistake in sending him to El Salvador, but they did not make a mistake in deporting him. That's the difference. So ultimately, it may result in he does get sent back to the U.S., but if he does get sent back to the U.S., it's only going to be to change flights. The U.S. is essentially going to act as a layover, like flying out of Newark or something like that, like Dallas-Fort Worth, because he's going to go to another place. He's not coming back here. He's not going back to Maryland. So if the worst case scenario, as I see it, is that I think if the Supreme Court of the United States comes back and says the administration has to facilitate his return, which I don't know how they do because now they're getting engaged in foreign policy, which is beyond the scope of the court. But let's say hypothetically they did that, then the president can have him flown to the United States and then immediately escorted to another plane that takes him to a different country or lands in the U.S. so they can say he was brought back and then immediately refuels and flies to another country. You don't have to change flights. Or maybe it has enough fuel on it that it doesn't need to refuel. They just have to, nothing. They just touch down on U.S. soil and then fly him away. That's all we're talking about here. I mean, this is just a lot of drama because the media and the Democrats love making drama. But here's what Senator Chris Van Hollen, the Democrat senator of Maryland, had to say regarding this guy, cut number 7.
I saw the comments of President Bukele, and I look forward to meeting with him. I've requested to meet with him. I reached out to the ambassador here to ask to meet while he's here. But I've also made clear if we can't meet here, I do intend to go to El Salvador to discuss the release of this individual who is illegally detained. A Maryland man who's the father of three in a notorious prison in El Salvador. And I believe the president of El Salvador will recognize why it's important to allow him to return to the United States of America, because it is absolutely unjust and illegal to have this Marylander detained one more day in a notorious prison in El Salvador. Of course, President Trump could have just said, you know, bring him home. Of course, he could have done that. But this is an administration that has lied about Mr. Abrego Garcia, right? The vice president of the United States tweeted out that he had a criminal record. That was a lie. They're just lying. They've gotten caught lying. They don't want to admit it. And they have an obligation to bring him home. But I will say the president of El Salvador should not now take it upon himself to say that he is detaining him for one more day, because that is kidnapping. I understand that the attorney general said that we would provide a plane to bring him home. So all the president of El Salvador has to do now is hand over and release an innocent man and let him come home to his family.
But there's a deportation order against him, Senator. So he's to be deported to another country that's not El Salvador. You keep saying this Marylander as if he's going to live his life in Maryland, but that's not accurate. Caroline Levin was asked about that. You've got Senator Chris Van Hollen here being so sympathetic to this Maryland man, as if some guy, you know, walking down the street of Annapolis was eating a crab cake and got picked up and sent to an El Salvador prison. This is what she said of this, cut number three.
The Democrat and media outrage over the deportation of Abrego Garcia, an MS-13 El Salvadorian illegal alien criminal who was hiding in Maryland, has been nothing short of despicable. Based on the sensationalism of many of the people in this room, you would think we deported a candidate for Father of the Year. That's because, unfortunately, many in this country care more about this quote-unquote Maryland father, a legal alien MS-13 gang member, than a Maryland mother and an American citizen who was brutally murdered at the hands of a different illegal alien. Of course, I am referring to Rachel Morin. And if you didn't see, yesterday, a Maryland jury found illegal alien Victor Antonio Martinez Hernandez guilty of murdering Rachel Morin in August of 2023. She was a 37-year-old mother of five who was jogging in an otherwise safe community northeast of Baltimore when this monster ambushed, strangled, and beat her to death before stuffing her brutalized body in a tunnel drain. The Morin family finally got justice yesterday, but they will never get Rachel back. Our hearts go out to Rachel's family, her five children, and her mother, Patty, who has suffered the unimaginable loss of her daughter.
The point is, you haven't heard a lot about that from the media. You've heard a lot about this Maryland man who's not an American citizen. He is a citizen of El Salvador. Now, the question is, should he be in prison? And I don't know that, but that's an issue for El Salvador to work out. And I would hope, and I don't know what kind of civil liberties exist in El Salvador. I would hope that whatever me personally speaking now, if El Salvador does not have evidence that he's committed a crime, I would hope that he's not in prison. And if they do have evidence, then would hope he gets a trial. And then if accordingly then sentenced to prison, that'd be my hope for him. My hope is that he would be released from prison unless they can prove he's guilty of something. But that doesn't change the fact that he's a citizen of that country. And there was a deportation order to remove him from the United States. I personally don't like the idea of anybody being in prison without due process, but that's not my business, because that's El Salvador, not the United States of America. We can't compel El Salvador to release people out of their prisons. We can hope. We can ask them, say, you know, due process is big in this country. Abrego Garcia had it before he was deported. You should give him due process and not just keep him in prison, because I think that that's reasonable. I think everybody can agree on that point. If he's really a terrorist in your country, then have a trial, prove that. Maybe they already have. I don't know. Maybe they did that before. I have no idea how the El Salvadorian legal system works. Not versed in that. But it's also not a problem for American courts, how the treatment of one of their citizens. That's not an issue for American courts to deal with. And Caroline Levin also said that we're complying with all the court orders here. And I would imagine that if ultimately the court rules that he has to be returned to the United States, then he's just going to wind up being deported again. That's what she said on that point, cut number four.
concern is the president that a federal judge could hold a Trump administration official in contempt of court for defying deportation orders?
We are complying with all court orders. So I see what you're trying to do there with that question. But we're very confident that every action taken by this administration is within the confines of the law. And we continue to comply with the court's orders. And you have seen that. And the president made that clear yesterday in the Oval Office with President Bukele.
So they're complying with the courts, and that's how that goes. We'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with the court case. This is not over yet. And whatever this judge rules, if he rules today or he rules tomorrow or he rules next week, it's ultimately going to go back to the Supreme Court. So this story is not going anywhere, at least not anytime soon. All right. Natural Lawn of America. If you want green grass for your lawn, if you want fewer weeds, if you want to use a local family-owned company, if you want the work to be guaranteed, you want to reach out to Natural Lawn of America and do what I did years ago and reach out to them and make them your choice in lawn care, because their program is going to be customized to the needs of your lawn. From safer organic fertilizers, insect control, your lawn is going to look beautiful, and it's going to be safer for the kids and safer for the pets. And every year, Natural Lawn of America will seed your lawn for free. That overseeding of your lawn makes such a huge difference in that green, lush grass that everybody wants. So just call them, 1-800-FREE-SEED, 1-800-FREE-SEED. And every year they'll seed your lawn, and they're going to make sure that your lawn has what your lawn needs. And what I mean by that is it's not cookie cutter. There's a lot of cookie cutter lawn care companies out there. And you don't want to be doing this yourself. You want to have the experts do this, because these guys approach it from looking at everything, from the soil to the amount of shade, water, your lawn gets all of it. That's why it works, and that's why it's worked for me all these years. It's my lawn care company, Natural Lawn of America, 1-800-FREE-SEED.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
I think it's obvious that this is going to be, I mean, the American people don't want criminals on their streets. They just really don't have sympathy for this. And when you're talking about deporting people and this idea that a judge comes around and says the administration now has to do 500,000 separate cases, that's insane. It's just really insane. But Joe Biden gave mass parole to everybody. He just did this executive power. So then the question is, can the next executive then just take it away? Because Congress didn't do it. It wasn't done by the law. It wasn't done by a law that they passed. It was done by Joe Biden's imagination. So that's where that stands right now. Let me just switch gears real quick. I just want to the suspect in the burning down Governor Josh Shapiro's residence, this guy, Cody Ballmer, the suspect, this guy is crazy and nuts and apparently was off his meds, bipolar, schizophrenic. He was in court yesterday. Let's cue up cut number 8 here. This is from 6ABC. They brought him into court. He stuck his tongue out at somebody, and there's no bail that's been put on this guy. So this is what we know about him so far. Cut number 8.
Cody Ballmer remained silent as he was brought into a Dauphin County courtroom this evening. The 38-year-old is facing several charges, including attempted murder, arson, and domestic terrorism. He is accused of breaking into the governor's mansion and firebombing the residence as Governor Shapiro and his family slept inside.
This was a personal attack on the governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Harrisburg's fire chief says they were called to the fire just after 2 a.m. Sunday. The governor and his family were safely evacuated as fire crews forced entry into the home. They were met by fire in the dining room, where the governor's family and friends held a Passover Seder just hours earlier.
When we look at the fire grew fairly quickly because it was accelerated by those Molotov cocktails that were used in the firebombing.
State police say Ballmer, who turned himself in, admitted to tossing Molotov cocktails into the residence. According to an affidavit, he told investigators he hated the governor, saying if he encountered him in the home, he would have beaten him with his hammer.
He brought all the tools he needed to carry this out. We are proceeding under the basis that this was an intentional, this was an attempt to kill.
Sources say Ballmer had previously expressed disdain for Democrats and President Trump on social media. He is described as an auto mechanic in the Harrisburg area. According to ABC News, Ballmer served 8 years as an Army reservist, repairing construction equipment, but he was never deployed.
So he's definitely off his rocker and off his meds, this guy. And, you know, we'll keep an eye on that for you. But I said yesterday, and I condemned this when it happened, and I put the clip on social media today. We talked about this on the show yesterday. When Chuck Schumer was confronted about all the violence against Tesla, he said, "I'm not going to comment about Tesla, but I will tell you, Elon Musk is ruining the country." Democrats won't condemn the continued violence and destruction and firebombing of Tesla dealerships. And it's wrong if it's done to a governor's house. It's wrong if it's done to a Tesla dealership. Anytime anyone engages in political violence, whether they're crazy or not, it's wrong. And you should say it's wrong. And the fact that Chuck Schumer couldn't answer that question is shameful. But Pam Bondi spoke about it last night on Fox News. This is cut number 12. She was on there talking about another person who's now been charged with firebombing a Tesla dealer. Cut number 12.
Now, I think someone might be visiting one of those prisons. It looks like you got one of these guys, a Tesla terrorist. That's right. And he's got some lipstick. What's that?
You know, Jesse, this guy is charged with committing the Tesla offense in New Mexico in February and then the GOP headquarters in March. These people thought they could get away with it. They can't. This is our fifth major arrest on Tesla. I guess they are listening. They better listen. This guy is looking at 40 years in prison. I have directed my prosecutors not to make any offers. He is going away, if convicted, for 40 years. He is the fifth major arrest we've made, and stay tuned for more.
All right. I mean, I don't know when this is going to stop, but there's a problem with violence and it's on the left, and that's just the way it is. And it's got to stop. It really does. It has to stop. It just needs to stop. Nobody should think this is okay in our country. Oh, you know who this is remarkable here on this issue of using lawfare and going after the president in all these various capacities. This Congresswoman, Representative Laura Friedman, saying the quiet part out loud, as we say, saying the quiet part out loud, admitting that House Democrats are meeting with left-wing attorneys general to try to stop President Trump at every turn, everywhere. This is from C-SPAN. This is cut number 9. This is Congresswoman from California, Laura Friedman. Take a listen.
Every single week, we have a litigation working group where a large group of us, and I'm talking there's maybe 75 members of the House, sit down every single week with the AGs to talk about legal strategy. This is all going on every single week behind the scenes. It is nonstop. Nonstop talk, nonstop introduction of bills and legislation, nonstop being on social media as much as we can without being throttled and without the, you know, crazy analytics and doing all these things.
Whatever we got to do to stop them, we'll do it. We'll do it in the courts. We'll do it everywhere. We'll do it in the courts and we'll just keep going. So there's going to be more lawfare. There's no question in my mind about that. But it's just stupid that they're going to keep losing is the problem. Now, look, they might win here and there on the federal level, but they're going to ultimately lose before the Supreme Court. They're just trying to delay as much as they can before the midterm elections. That's their goal in all this, is to just delay as much as they possibly can. They don't want to go into a situation where they actually see Trump accomplish anything. They want to try to stall. That's what this is about. It's just about stalling until they can get to the midterms and then try to win, have the Democrats win back, and then they can stop him and probably impeach him again, and that's where we're going to be. So that's the strategy. If you're wondering what the strategy is on this tax day, it's using your taxpayer dollars to try to stop the president from accomplishing anything so that they can try to just punt to midterms. That's what they're looking to do right now. So will they be successful? Probably not. But they may delay because the court's process moves slow, and they know that, and the court moves slow, and that's what's going to happen. So that's where we are. All right. One other thing I wanted to mention is we have our Politics and Pints coming up, which is going to be on May 6th. It's going to be in Phoenixville. It's going to be a lot of fun. So hope you'll join us for that. Those nights are always fun. We all get together and hang out and talk about, we're going to talk about Trump's first 100 days, what it's been like. If you want to get your tickets, just go to 1210WPHT.com, 1210WPHT.com, and do it today. Joe Biden's going to speak tonight. What is he going to say? Is he going to talk to any invisible people, any dead world leaders? I don't know. when you look at Kamala Harris and you look at California, they're like, when they think about her running, not happy about it. They're not looking good. They're not excited about this. But Democrats have a problem. And this is something that was noticed by CNN's pollster, this guy, Harry Enten. It's a key metric. Let's cue up cut 13 here. There's one metric that really stood out for him as he was looking at polling data and how people feel about the Republicans versus how people feel about the Democrats and why the Democrats are in such a bad place right now and why people like Gavin Newsom are turning around and trying to run from the Democrat brand. You could see that happening by pretending like he's a moderate now. It's because of this. This is cut 13.
This, to me, is one of the most shocking pieces of poll data that I truthfully have seen this year, or maybe in any prior year.
Really?
Yes, really, because I want you to take a look. Cares more about the needs for people like you. You mentioned the Kate Baldwin. We got a tie, even after this tariff war had already started, split between Democrats and Republicans on how people feel. Which party cares more for needs of people like you? And why is that so surprising? Because I want you to take a look at prior years. Democrats always lead on this question. Back in 2017, before the 2018 midterms, 13-point lead. 2005, a 23-point lead for Democrats. 1994, which was a big Republican year, a 19-point lead for Democrats. And now, all of a sudden, a tie? All of a sudden, the Democrats, who were the party of the people, no more. We get a tie on this question, on a question that has traditionally overwhelmingly been a Democratic advantage which party cares more for the needs of people like you. It's truly something I would not have expected to see, especially after this tariff war had begun.
All right. Well, Democrats have problems. We got a big 5 o'clock hour coming up straight ahead for you. So don't go away. We're streaming live on YouTube. Join the fun. If you have not joined the fun yet, what are you waiting for? Dr. Wilfred Riley's on deck. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.